We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 66, opening day edition 2016. I'm super excited. Scott, finally, Yankees opening day is here. Barring any torrential downpours, which I think is really scheduled for Monday in the Bronx, hopefully there'll be Yankees baseball today.
It has been a long winter. It hasn't been that bad of a winter. It's just been a long winter. We have been talking every single week about this team, and now finally we get to see real baseball. Real baseball tomorrow. I'm pumped up. I can't wait for it. And I'm just so happy this day is finally here. It's one of my favorite days of the year.
So hopefully everyone's listening. It's around 11 a.m. Monday. Game time's about 2 hours away. You can lead this right into John and Susan's pregame, which is what I will be doing at work tomorrow. Hopefully be able to, if not stream the game, certainly listen to the sweet sounds of John and Susan while I'm at work tomorrow.
But I believe it's an ESPN game too. So even if you have ESPN, you should be able to stream it somehow too.
Yeah, I actually have the MLB package on, you know, on MLB TV.
Beautiful.
I'll be able to find a way to watch the game. As I said, episode 66. So it was funny. Someone replied on Twitter to our last episode and said, why did you spend the first 2 minutes talking about Phil Hughes? Because right. We talked about Phil Hughes 65 last week. So just so everyone, in case there's any new listeners out there, we like to talk about some previous players that wore the number that corresponds to the episode. So 66 is going out to Andrew Brackman. I'm sure most people don't know who Andrew Brackman is, but he was one of the Killer Bees back in, you know, the 2009, 2010, 2011 era, when we thought the future of the Yankees pitching staff was going to be Betances, who obviously has amounted to a great pitcher, Betances, Brackman, and Benuelos. So one out of three, I guess, is not bad. They were kind of the poor man's Jabba Hughes and Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, and Brackman was a guy who, I think, what was he, 6'9", 6'10"? He was a tall guy.
Lanky right-hander, yeah. He had some arm troubles as soon as they drafted him. I think they knew they were getting those arm troubles when they drafted him, but he had such a talent. He could reach 100 miles an hour, so.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that just never came to fruition. Unfortunately, the Killer Bees. I mean, Betances really was first slotted as a starter and then really found his home because he was having so much trouble finding the plate when he was a starter. Andrew Brackman, I think he went to Cincinnati for a minute or two, and then I have no idea if he's still playing or not.
He's not. He's out of the league. So you and I are recording this. This is Sunday. And the MLB's official opening day is today, Sunday, and they did a little bit different thing this year where there's three games this afternoon. Obviously, there's the Sunday night baseball game, Mets and Royals World Series rematch, but there's also two other games. The Blue Jays and Rays are playing right now, and the Pirates and the Cardinals played earlier. And this is the first time baseball has done this in a while, right? Usually, it's just the one Sunday night game.
Yeah, that I can remember. As far as my memory goes back with ESPN Sunday night games for opening day, it's usually just one at night. So I know usually on opening day on Monday, they have a whole bunch of games on ESPN. So yeah, I think this is a new thing. I kind of like it though. It just gives, it's more baseball. So on a day that nobody works, which is good.
Yeah, I like it too, because I wasn't going to be doing anything else this afternoon anyway. It got me thinking that they should even expand upon this next year and just stack the game Sunday and Monday, or Monday and Tuesday, whatever it is, but just do a bunch of day baseball games. I understand they want to get the ratings for the Sunday night baseball game, but there's something about day opening day baseball that's definitely special and fun.
Well, and I think on Sunday you can definitely do that, right? You can get a lot more day games in because people aren't working and you can still get the ratings. So
Maddie is not happy over the fact that the Yankee game might get rained out.
Yes, she is definitely not happy about this. She is not happy about that, but she's excited about opening day.
So baseball, unlike football, where the first day, Sunday of the NFL season, everyone's watching every game. You're watching the red zone. You have multiple TVs going, trying to get every game. Baseball is definitely more local, where the fan only cares about whatever team they root for. You and I are not normal baseball fans. We obviously are watching whoever's playing right now, since we're just so starved for some baseball action. But do you think this is actually helping, where people are tuning in?
I think so. I mean, I think it's the more you can get it on times like a Sunday afternoon in the middle of, kind of a non-season, I think is a good thing because, one, you don't have basketball to contend with, or at least the college basketball. The college basketball championships will be Monday night, so Sunday is kind of a free day for whatever. And I think a lot of people are doing what you're doing, is just kind of hanging out looking for something to watch. So
yeah.
And plus, interest has peaked at this point. I mean, there's so much buildup over the winter that it's a really good opportunity to get people to watch. Even if it's just for one day, you can get some new eyeballs on it at least.
Yeah, it's just been on in the background in the living room all day. I'm not necessarily sitting down and watching intently, but I check in every now and again.
I'm finally finishing the floors in my house. I have like one very small hallway to finish, and it's been on all day long. So I've been keeping an eye on what the Cardinals are doing. So
unfortunately, Schilling is calling the Blue Jays game, the Blue Jays Rays game, and I just can't stand to hear that guy talk.
Yeah, just mute it then and just watch.
Yeah. So the Yankees, as we have been saying, hopefully they play today, and I'm sure it's going to be miserable for anybody who's at the stadium. I remember last year it was like 75 and sunny, and then obviously, of course, it's going to be 35, 40 and rainy this year, but hopefully they get the game off. And, before we talk about break down the series versus the Astros and sort of what we expect this season, let's just wrap up some news and notes from the end of spring training. So the Yankees got some scary news when Andrew Miller was hit on his right wrist and he left the mound. He was pissed. He threw his glove down. Everybody knew it was serious, a serious issue. All the beat writers were tweeting it immediately. Turns out he has a fractured right wrist / hand, but he's going to pitch through it. He said, "Hey, I'm a left-handed pitcher. I don't understand why I can't pitch through an injury to my right hand." So you got to give him credit for being a gamer, I guess.
Absolutely. It's kind of refreshing to see that with a guy, who's the Yankees closer, a high statue guy. It's nice to see because, it's true. I mean, the type of fracture he had, I can imagine it's like, I don't even think they saw the fracture on the x-ray. It's one of those really small things that turns out to be a fracture, but it feels like a deep bruise. So I have a feeling if they pad it up, he can tolerate it. And I think I saw some statistic where he fielded 5 balls last year, something like that. So, it's
yeah, not a lot of contact off Andrew Miller.
Yeah, he's getting few and far between. So he really it's a matter of him, tolerating the pain and then able to, hit a ground ball or receive a ground ball as it comes back. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I give him a lot of credit and I'm very happy he did this. It gives him another leg up, I think, with Yankee fans, really, as far as their fandom and just kind of looking at a guy gutting through an injury.
He's been a team guy ever since he came in. He last year in spring training said, "Hey, whether it's me or Betances, it doesn't matter who closes, just want to put the team first." And obviously this year, when they traded for Chapman, he understood that if they go with Chapman, hey, I'm just here to help the team win. So I think so far, I mean, the signing of Andrew Miller has been one of the better ones they've had in recent memory.
Yeah, he's such a laid-back guy. He truly doesn't have any kind of an ego that you can tell that gets in the way of anything. He just wants to contribute and make this team better in any possible way that he can. And I really appreciate that. The fact that he just doesn't care what his role is, as long as he can, pitch to the best of his ability and help the team in a maximum way. And he's all good with that. Whether it's seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning, he doesn't care. Just give him the ball, get 3 outs, and wherever it is to help the team, and that's it. So I love it. I really do.
If you had to put a percentage on it, how much do you think it's going to affect his performance, this wrist issue?
I don't know. I think it's the mentality. So I think once he gets out there that first inning or two, and he gets used to, if there's extra padding in the glove, or just it feels different when he finished in his follow through, like I'm sure something's, you're going to feel it more when the blood starts pumping and going, and you start moving your body quite a bit. So I think he just needs to get used to it. Once he gets used to it, I don't think it'll affect him at all.
So I think it's going to affect him some, so for a few reasons. First of all, it's probably going to be painful catching a ball, right?
Maybe.
Okay, even if it's not, he's going to be cognizant of the fact that he doesn't have full mobility and strength in that wrist. So I don't want him sort of trying pitching away from contact or being tentative on fielding balls or anything like that. So I'm not saying it's going to definitely affect him and we're not going to have... we're going to have a struggling Andrew Miller, But if it's 10%, 15%, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, do you think McCann's going to be firing lasers back at him, you know, every pitch? Things like that. I think he's going to be catching the ball.
I think he'll be throwing Jorge Posada lobs.
Yes, but I think so, too. I think he's going to get some nice little lollipops back to him. He's going to be catching it in the webbing.
I know you said ground balls. He only fielded a handful last year, but he still has to be ready for them.
Yeah, I mean, he still has a glove. The hand's still there. You know, I think it may hurt if it hits your hand, but that's, you know, you kind of deal with the pain after that. Otherwise, it's all mentality.
It's a mental thing.
Right, but I just don't think that's – I don't think he is going to get affected too much by that. I feel like they've – you know, obviously he's going to get a lot of repetitions in so he can get used to the way it feels. And I just don't think he's that kind of guy who worries about, you know, the type of injury. It's not like where he can hurt himself type of injury. You know what I mean? Like it's just going to come back and it'll hurt a little bit and just a pain tolerance thing. It's not like a big injury for him to worry about. I don't know. It's not the same as like if he did something to his ankle and he just came back on it and he's worried that the ankle is not going to heal when he, you know, finishes his pitching motion. Something like that I could absolutely affect. Like, but this type of thing, it doesn't affect anything he does in his pitching motion.
So, do you remember when Kevin Brown punched the clubhouse wall in 2004 playoffs?
Yeah, it was a genius move. That guy was...
Well, that was his left hand, and he was right-handed, and he sucked. I think he probably sucked for other reasons.
But... He's also a basket case. That dude was a freaking... He was not right in the head.
George Steinbrenner absolutely loved Kevin Brown. He was obsessed with him. He was one of his favorite players in the league for whatever reason. I'm not sure.
He had good years. They just weren't with the Yankees.
Padres and Dodgers?
Rangers, right?
Uh-oh. I just remember didn't he pitch against the Yankees with the Padres in the World Series in 98?
I don't remember. Maybe he floated around quite a bit towards the end of his career, so I don't remember all the places he was. That's kind of ringing a bell.
Yeah. Well, Jim Abbott on Twitter offered to help Andrew Miller do the glove switch.
So. That's awesome. I love. Thank you, Jim Abbott, for coming out and doing that. What a nice guy. Jim Abbott's a motivational speaker now too. I believe that's his gig. He's like a consultant motivational speaker. So what better of a guy to teach you how to throw and field with the same hand? I mean,
dude pitched a no-hitter with one hand. I think Andrew Miller can close a couple games, right?
No doubt. That's one of my favorite games still today. I listened to that game on the radio. It was Sterling and Michael Kay.
Was it 4th of July against the Red Sox, right?
I don't know the exact date. I just remember I was in my bedroom listening to it on like a clock radio. It was an awesome game to listen to, and that's where I always wore 25. Actually, it was because of Jim Abbott.
Nice. And then Jason Giambi, and now Mark Teixeira.
That's right.
Long line of historic 25s. More bad news this past week was that Brian Mitchell is going to miss 3 months because he has turf toe. And I just feel terrible for Brian Mitchell. Dude had an awesome spring, made the team. He was going to be the fourth guy probably out of the bullpen in April. Really had a chance to prove himself and establish himself as a seventh inning guy for this team. He was right-handed, which is good because they had a lot of lefties already. And he gets this turf toe thing. And I mean... I'm angry because I think he was going to help the team, but I just feel bad for the dude.
I do too. And the crazy thing is we're looking at this team up and down, and going into the season, one of the absolute strengths is our bullpen. And we get a guy suspended for a month. Then we get a guy who gets fractures on his hand. Then we get Brian Mitchell, who just comes out of nowhere with a turf toe injury. Maddie's obviously pissed off about it. And you know, now it's a very big question mark. We don't know what the bullpen is.
Exactly.
I mean, because there's so many things going on with it. But yeah, I do feel bad for Brian Mitchell. I mean, he was pitching well last year too before that ball came up the middle, and I think kind of shook him, and he really wasn't the same guy after that. He had a phenomenal spring. Hopefully he could just come back from this turf toe. I hope this isn't the type of thing that lingers.
Why does turf toe keep you out 3 months?
It's one of those, I think it's because one, when you're, I don't know what foot it is. Do you know what foot it is?
I think it's his push off.
That's a big issue. I mean, a lot of your force and the velocity comes from your lower half when you're a pitcher. And if you can't get a good footing on the mound and on the rubber, it just doesn't feel right. That's a huge part for a pitcher. I mean, the little things like that, the extremities, your fingers and your toes, those are very, very important for pitchers. I mean, a blister, you've seen people keep people out.
I totally understand, but it's one of those things, turf toe, 3 months. Are you freaking kidding me?
It sounds bad, but I mean, think about like what Deion, that was a, for Deion Sanders in football, I mean, it's a huge injury. It's just a big, it sounds worse than it really is, but it's really just a fractured foot.
And like you were saying, the bullpen went from definite strength on this team to, at least for the month of April, a kind of a question mark. So we'll see what happens with Mitchell when he comes back, if he can fit back into the bullpen. I certainly hope he can. Obviously, Chapman will be back by then, and the three-headed monster should be going strong. But like I just said, I think I'm still a little bit worried for April, just because of the unknown factor past Betances, because of Miller's wrist. It's just still a little. I just want to see him pitch out there with that wrist before I can have full confidence that he's going to be, you know, 100% Andrew Miller.
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. I mean, we won't know until we see what he does and until he starts pitching, you know, with the wrist the way it is. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Hopefully, obviously the guy has a good mentality going into it. So he's a tough dude.
Yeah. Just wanted the Yankees to wrap everybody in bubble wrap for those last few games in spring training. Just get back to the Bronx healthy. Enough of this worrying. Some more final roster moves and some more moves that needed to be decided. First of all, Tanaka will start the opening day start, which is not a huge surprise. Girardi threw a little wrench into all of it, saying that he still needs to see Tanaka go out there and pitch. Tanaka did pitch the following day, but it didn't count as a game because it got rained out. But I guess he pitched well enough in those three or four innings to warrant the opening day start. CeCe was named as the fifth starter over Nova.
Shocker.
A lot of people upset about that. So I think we talked about it 2 weeks ago that Nova was out pitching CeCe, but Nova kind of pitched crappy his last 2 weeks of spring. So when all things being equal, of course they were going to not stick the guy making $25 million in the bullpen.
I mean, I think Nova really had to just dominate and clearly pass what CeCe. Because if you're talking about the fifth starter and you look at the guys that were potentially up for the role, Brian Mitchell, he was a starter, pitched better than all three of them combined. I mean, he had a phenomenal spring. And if you listen to some of the press conferences and the interviews that Cashman and Girardi were doing toward like last week, Mitchell really wasn't a consideration for that fifth starter. So they obviously weren't going really by performance solely. And I think Nova really had to just completely outshine CeCe and had to have a phenomenal spring for that to happen. And even if that happened, I'm not 100% sure that they would have put CeCe in the bullpen. So this is not surprising to me.
I said last week that I thought there was a real shot at CeCe going to the pen. Now I feel foolish.
Well, no, I don't think you're wrong, because I actually have kind of changed my tune a little bit. I believe that they're still open to it. I just don't think they were going to start the season like that. I think if we see CeCe struggle and then Nova, you know, obviously he'll have to get stretched out again, but I could absolutely see him at some point going to the bullpen. I don't think it's out of the question at this point. I think you're listening to these guys talking. If you listen to Cashman and Girardi, they've said time and time again on different radio shows that the contract is not an issue, and if he is not pitching well, then they will put him in the bullpen.
They're going to try and keep Nova stretched out. They're going to use him as a long man and swing man. So I think they don't plan on using him in short situations, so he should be good to go if CeCe is struggling. They're not going to take anybody else out of the rotation.
Or if they skip a start and Nova is a guy that can kind of slot in there,
you know,
a six-man rotation.
The problem with the six-man rotation in April is that there's already a lot of off days.
Right.
So now you're bumping guys back to 7 days rest and you're totally messing them all up. You can go six-man rotation when you have, you know, 19 games in 20 days where people need rest. But when you already have, you know, they're playing Monday, then they have Tuesday off, and then they play two more days, and then the weekend, and then they have another day off. So I think it's just there's too many days off in early April to go six man.
Yeah, I just, you know, no one's going to say six man rotation. I have a feeling we're going to see Nova making starts earlier than expected, earlier than anybody else would be if they were truly a long man swing guy. You know, I still think they have him as a starting pitcher, and we're going to see him pitching early in the season at, you know, getting starts.
People freaking out as soon as CeCe was named the starter that, oh, the season's a disaster. The Yankees are going nowhere. It's the fifth starter. Whether it was Nova or CeCe, you don't win or lose divisions based
exactly
on your fifth starter.
If your season is contingent on your fifth starter, we have bigger problems.
Yeah, you're already screwed. So, yeah, we don't want the guy going out there giving up 10 runs in three innings every fifth day, because that's awful. But you just want your fifth starter to give you a chance to win, where after five innings, you are at least in the game. And I certainly think CC is still capable enough of doing that. But I guess we will see. I don't know how Nova gets back into the rotation unless CC gets, like I said, 10 runs in three innings or he gets injured. I just don't see a scenario in which Nova just pitches well out of the bullpen and pitches his way back into the rotation.
No, it would have to be contingent on CC blowing up. It would be a CC disaster for him to get back in. You're right.
Yeah. Which kind of sucks for Nova because...
It's a contract year for him, too. Yeah. It's a big year for him. He needs to show that he could do well. He's playing for another contract right now. So I think you're going to, you know, I don't know what, you know, what he's going to, I could see maybe if he's stuck in that bullpen, that could be a guy to keep your eye on come the trade deadline.
I'm not sure how much value you can get by pitching out of the bullpen, but I guess the team would be taking a shot on him. So Romine will be the backup catcher, which I think at the beginning of spring was definitely a competition between Romine and Sanchez. But as spring, you know, went on, Sanchez, you could see he wasn't ready. Romine was playing really well. So he will be the backup catcher. I still think we could see Sanchez later in the season, though. We've seen Romine in the big leagues now at least 2 years, and the dude cannot hit in the big leagues.
He's shown, I mean, this spring, he's definitely hit the ball a lot better than he ever did. And he made concerted efforts in the offseason from what he was saying that he, you know, really ramped up the offensive side and got a lot more reps in. So we'll see what happens. But you're right. He's definitely not known for his offense. He's a defensive catcher. And really, that's what Girardi wants as a backup catcher. You need to be defensive minded. You need to make sure that you're doing well back there. And I just don't think Girardi was comfortable with Sanchez defensively. I think that was the bigger thing, really. And they don't want to stunt his growth offensively because they know that's where he really shines. And, you know, getting reps every day in AAA, it just makes more sense to me as a catcher. It really does. So I agree with the decision. And unless Romine's just completely awful, you know, I see this sticking for a little while. And they're going to really give Sanchez an opportunity to have a good year in AAA. And then, you're saying we're not going to – it's not the end of Sanchez. But I think after the All-Star break is more of a realistic time to see him.
Yeah, Romine just needs to not be a total dead weight in the lineup. You can't be not being able to sacrifice runners over or get a fly ball when you need to score a runner. I'm not expecting him to hit, you know, 275 or anything.
Right.
But just do the little things at the plate where you're contributing and helping the team in some way offensively. And it's not just a complete zero. Because then you start to get annoyed.
We'll see. I mean, the other thing is, you know, we're going to see, you know, CC has, and a couple, sometimes pitchers will get their kind of personal catcher, their guy. I'm interested to see how Romine actually fits in with this, with the starting five and who he kind of gels with. That'd be interesting to see, because if he does get a really good rapport with one of those guys at the end of the rotation, I could see him going in there every fifth day.
You mean like a John Flaherty, Randy Johnson type personal catcher?
Exactly. I mean, what if CC and Romine really, really hit it off, and Romine's probably, he's right there with McCann as far as defense. I mean, he's extremely skilled defensively. I could see something like that kind of turning into it. Plus, they want to get McCann more days off. So if Romine shows that he can actually handle the bat, I could see something like that coming out.
Yeah, I think Romine will get some days against left-handed pitchers when you want to give McCann an extra, you know, a day off or something against a tough lefty. But personal catcher thing, I know Girardi tends to stay away from that. He usually mixes and matches who his catchers is for the pitchers. All right, so it was in question about the bullpen, who was going to get the last spots. Johnny Barbato, Luis Sessa, and Kirby Yates will be the final three into the bullpen. Barbato and Sessa made the roster before the Mitchell injury, but I think Yates got the final spot because Mitchell went down. That's what it seems to be.
Barbato and Sessa both pitched very well. Kirby Yates pitched very well. I think Sessa is probably the biggest surprise in my opinion, because I don't think they had him going into spring training slotted for this bullpen role. If you remember back when Cashman made this trade for Justin Wilson, Sessa was part of that trade, and Sessa, for people whose name is very familiar, he was actually traded from the Mets to the Tigers and part of the Cespedes deal, and then the Yankees got him in the Justin Wilson deal. So, but he came over as a starter. This was a guy that was supposed to add, depth for our minor leagues and for the club. So him coming in now as a reliever is definitely a little eye popping for me. I thought for sure he was going to go back to AAA and stay stretched out as a guy who was going to be, you know, maybe one of the first two guys called up if we needed a starting pitcher. So I was actually surprised with that move.
Oh, so it was, I thought I read that Yates got the last spot, but I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter. We're talking about guys who are going to be seeing mostly time in the fifth and sixth inning, or if there's a lopsided game. So again, we're not going to be, hopefully not going to be counting on them to get big outs late in the game, like we saw with some questionable guys last year towards the end of the season. So, you know, as far as the roster goes, I think that there weren't any major surprises. Were you surprised by anything? What would you say your biggest surprise is? Maybe a guy that made the 25 man or didn't make the 25 man?
I guess the Ronald Torres as the utility guy was kind of a surprise for me. Obviously, you and I have been on the Rob Refsnyder bandwagon for a long time, and we really want to see him in the majors. But he did shoot himself in the foot a little bit the last week and, you know, 2 weeks at third base with a few errors. And Torres really, you know, he hit over during the spring. I think the last time I saw him, he's hitting 280 plus. So, and he could play multiple positions. But this is a guy that was released and then picked back up. He was a trade in the offseason, I think, from the Dodgers. So he's actually floated around. And so he's kind of the journeyman guy, but he's young. So
yeah, he's only
23. He's an interesting player. Yeah, he's an interesting player. And
it's funny, if you look up his picture online, the dude looks 38. he's got an old face, but yeah, he is only 23.
So that's a guy that has some potential. I mean, maybe he's a type of Solarte guy, right? A guy that really wasn't a high prospect, but ends up being a pretty good player. So who knows? I mean, maybe I think he was probably the biggest surprise for me. He wasn't really on my radar during the offseason, obviously. Even when we made that trade, I thought this was going to be a guy that was going to be in AAA for sure and just be used as a call-up. I didn't think he had a shot at making the team.
I would agree with that. He sort of came on at the end of the camp, which pushed him past Refsnyder. I wouldn't call Refsnyder not making it a surprise. I think we've seen enough that they're pretty tough on Refsnyder, but
yeah.
Maybe the biggest disappointment for me is the fact that Refsnyder was not capable of making the team.
I hope I hope they put him at third base quite a bit in AAA so that he can get more reps in, because I just think that's what he needs. I think he needs some reps. I think he did a very good job for not playing there before. He had played he had played there before in college occasionally, but he was an outfielder in college. But
and hadn't played there in at least three seasons professionally.
Yeah, so the fact that he went over there and you know, did a pretty good job. I mean, some of those balls, the last week, he got hit in the face twice. One of them was a bad hop. It was a real tough field. The ball was bouncing all over the place. And the other one was he misplayed the ball. But it's just unfortunate to see what that guy, you know, how he kind of finished camp, because I thought in the beginning he had a lot of good momentum. But you know, the one thing I will say about Rob Refsnyder this camp is I think he's changed the minds of a lot of people in the Yankees organization, because if you listen to them talk, they definitely are singing a different tune about him, about his work ethic, about how he comes in and you know puts a lot of reps in at third base, you know, just trying to get better defensively because that's where they need him. You know, everything he was saying, how he'll go anywhere he needs, anywhere Girardi needs him to make this team, this is what he wants to do. So I think he definitely turned some heads and changed some minds in the organization. And I do believe we'll see him actually earlier than expected this year. I think he'll be up at some point before the All-Star break.
My Little League coach would be proud of him for staying in front of the ball, though.
He did. He took one right off the grill.
So in my 10 bold predictions, I don't know if you had a chance to read it, which I put up on Friday, which for everybody out there, it was not an April Fool's post. We had a couple April Fool's posts go on the website, but my 10 bold predictions were not April Fool's. So those are actually some bold predictions out of me for this year. But I said that Refsnyder will get at least 100 plate appearances in the big leagues this year. It just might not be with the Yankees.
Yeah, so you're thinking that he's a value guy or building value in AAA to possibly get traded.
I think so.
And I could see that. I mean, I think this guy deserves an opportunity somewhere, whether it's in the Yankees organization or somewhere else. But I really do hope it's here, because I think he's a very valuable asset. I think he's a guy that can play multiple positions. Obviously, we know what he could do with the bat. And, you know, he's athletic. He can steal bases. I mean, he's just an all-around ball player. And I've grown attached to him. So I want him to make the team and contribute.
I'm totally with you. If I'm a team like, Braves, Dodgers, Reds, one of these teams that really does Padres, that doesn't really have a chance of really doing much this year, and you look at this guy and saying, the Yankees aren't using him, we could get him low. We know he can probably hit. We can deal with some growing pains. So I could see something like that going.
Yeah, I could too.
The Yankees have to flip him for a need later in the season. All right. Well, as we talk about 2016, what are you looking forward to seeing most?
So I think this year, you know, we didn't sign a major free agent. It was kind of a weird offseason because the Yankees didn't make that big splash that all the fans are looking for and that, you know, prognosticators will rate your season on who you've acquired or who you've bought basically in free agency. But Brian Cashman went and made some extremely savvy moves. And I think one of the best moves, and I've talked about this in the past, I think this will go down as probably one of Brian Cashman's best moves and actually one of his better off seasons without, you know, signing a big free agent is Starlin Castro. This whole spring, I've been watching this guy. He's been getting me really excited. You can just tell that he and Didi are gelling defensively up the middle. I think he's been on fire for the spring at the plate. This is just a guy who's still young, 26 years old, and has a very bright future. Three-time All-Star. We got him for a swing guy. It's just, to me, it's unfathomable still. And I'm really looking forward to watching him all year long and you know, really gel with his team. And I think he's going to – I really think that the change of scenery and the fact that he's in New York is on a team that has lots of big names, I think is a very good thing for him. He could kind of settle in, just play baseball, and just you know, do what he normally does and whatever he feels right. He doesn't have to be that big guy. So the biggest thing I'm looking forward to is Starlin Castro and watching him all year.
And you saw it. He and Didi are now best friends.
They are best friends. Yep. That was a good little clip. This year, the Yankees doing their movie outtake. That was good.
I was impressed with Didi's acting chops, but Starlin could use a few classes, I think.
Castro is not a good actor. He is a phenomenal second baseman, not a good actor. Didi, on the other hand, impressive.
Showing the personality. Impressive. You can really tell the dude has personality, which I love to see.
He's creative. I mean, he's an artist. So those creative guys tend to have personality. I like it.
I think I told this story on the podcast before, but I was in Amsterdam last summer, and obviously it's Dutch, and actually Didi was born in Amsterdam. But I was talking to a bartender who I think I was wearing a Yankees hat, and he mentioned to me, oh, you're a Yankees fan? I said, yeah. I said, oh, I am too. Oh, really? I didn't know the Yankee fans were in the Netherlands. But he said, yeah, as soon as the Yankees traded for Didi, I became a Yankees fan because I played with him when I was younger. I guess they played in a league in the Netherlands together. And he said he's one of the nicest guys. He still, you know, he's not friendly with them still, but still kind of keeps in touch with them. Said Didi was one of the nicest guys he's ever met. So I think we're starting to see that. You can kind of tell that the entire team is getting behind Didi, which is awesome to see.
Well, and he's really coming into his own, you know, playing baseball. I mean, we know what he does defensively. The guy's a... I think he had some struggles early in the season last year just because he was pressing too hard and he was trying to – I mean, look at what you were trying to do, for God's sake.
Impossible.
You're filling the friggin' role of Derek Jeter, who's like a god to every one of us. So you just can't do it, and he was definitely pressing defensively because that's where he's he's probably one of the best defensive shortstops in the league. And we saw that as the season went on. I mean, he makes phenomenal plays. He's got a cannon of an arm. But the one thing that we didn't think that we were getting from him was – the bat. I mean, he proved that he can hit the ball well throughout the entire season. As he went on, he got better, hit for average, and came up with some big hits. So I'm looking forward to seeing him develop too. I think the fact that Didi and Castro together, you know, they're both young guys, can really gel together and kind of grow together. I think it's really going to be fun to watch.
My biggest thing with Didi last year was the fact that he was putting together good at-bats every at-bat towards the end of the season. He's never going to hit 330. It's just not in the cards for him. But he's making pitchers work, and especially tough lefties. He was putting together good at-bats. He was hanging in there. He was hitting line drives, and I think that is all you can ask out of him. Another great trade for Cashman. Put that in his good trades column.
Yeah, and they're all sneaky trades. They're guys who are maybe – because Didi wasn't as high of a prospect when we got him as he was when he first
came
out.
The Diamondbacks kind of gave up on him a little bit.
The Diamondbacks have given up on a lot of prospects. A few of them are shortstop. They've just made wrong decisions quite a bit, I think, with their prospects. But Didi's a guy who really has shown very well, and you're right. Cashman kind of struck at a time where he wasn't really a big talked about guy, and he turned it into something that was truly positive. And I think Cashman's done that over and over again. I think that's going to be his legacy. Really, I think is going to be you know, how he listens to his scouts and makes these decisions on some of these guys, you know, maybe who are, you know, how to, like, look at Castro, what he did in the first half of the season. He was terrible, but the second half he hit .360. I mean, and so he struck when the iron was extremely hot. He saw, you know, the what he did at the end of the year, and he thought that was really his guy. And, you know, I don't know if these are the scouts that are giving him all of this information and who Castro's Cashman's talking to, but he has a very good feel for when to go for guys as far as a value.
So what I'm looking forward to most is May 5th, which is the first day that Aroldis Chapman will be back, and the three-headed monster that everyone is excited about will be in action. I think that it's going to be one of the most electric bullpens baseball history has ever seen. Every guy can throw 98 miles an hour plus. They all strike people out. If the Yankees have a lead after six innings, just it's game over. Lights out for the other team. And that puts pressure on the other team. They know they need to score before the sixth inning because they're shit out of luck as soon as Betances, Miller, and Chapman comes in. It's a weapon that the Yankees have not ever had in my lifetime. Yes, they'll never have a better weapon than Mariano Rivera, but they struggled to get to Mariano a couple of those years. So, three-headed monster, I cannot wait to see it.
So, do you put a lot of stock now, or do you put a lot of emphasis on this first month of the season until we can get Chapman back healthy? I mean, do you think this is a very integral part until we can get it back and kind of have the guys really fill in?
Are you saying, am I worried?
Yes, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I know how pessimistic you are, so I'm wondering what your feeling is for this first month. Like, are you waiting for the?
So I'm not gonna lie, the Miller wrist thing, which I know he's gonna pitch through, and the turf toe for Mitchell definitely now has me worried. I don't have a lot of confidence in Barbato and Yates and Sessa. I just don't. Until I see them on the mound, they're David Carpenter to me. So. So we know the Yankees starters don't go deep into games, and right. Girardi, especially early in the season, is not going to push guys to go, you know. Oh, certainly he's not going to push a guy like Severino, but he knows he's always got a quick hook with Pineda. He's going to have a quick hook with Tanaka because we got to treat him with kid gloves. We've got to keep him healthy. I mean, Evaldi is always at 100 pitches through five innings. So. That's fine when we have the three-headed monster, but when we only have one head that's fully healthy, another head that has a bum wrist, and then a bunch of question marks, that sixth inning, first couple outs of the seventh inning is still going to be a circus, I think.
I mean, I kind of agree with you. I actually think this is actually a very important April. I mean, everybody always talks about the April is April, and it doesn't really matter all that much, and you just kind of get through it. But I actually think that the things could go badly if the because exactly what you said, the starters need to get length, and we all know in the beginning of the season, just usually they don't go as long, right? At least the first couple starts out, especially with Girardi. He's gonna have kind of a short release for some of these guys. So the bullpen's gonna play a very integral role. And guys like Barbato and Sessa and Kirby Yates, and you know, going back to Chasen Shreve, who has the rebound from last year, these guys are gonna play an extremely important role early in the season until we can get some of these guys back. You know, maybe, I mean, who knows? We don't know what Miller's gonna do. I don't think it's gonna be as big of an issue, but really, you never know until it actually happens. So I actually do think that this month is a big time for some of these young guys to really step up. So I don't know if I'm worried, but I'm definitely more concerned than I would be normally, I think, in April.
I'm slightly anxious about it, I'm not gonna lie. So
yeah.
All right, X factors. Who is your one guy on the roster, one out of the 25 guys this year? Who's the X factor for the Yankees?
So it's kind of related to what we just talked about. My X factor this year, and this is for multiple reasons. Tanaka is my X factor. That's the guy I think is an extremely, extremely big cog and you know, linchpin of this season, because one, I think the starting rotation is probably our biggest question mark if you're looking at the team as a whole. I think the offense is going to be substantially better this year. I think we're going to hit. We have a lot more balance. I don't think we're going to get, you know, completely just numbed out by a starting left-handed pitcher anymore, where we do have right-handed bats that are actually worth a damn. And Girardi will have more flexibility with Castro and some of the switch hitters that we have. And obviously now with Didi hitting pretty well, I mean, he's a guy that he, like you said earlier, he has good at bats, and I think Girardi has confidence in him. So I actually do think the offense is going to be pretty good. And I think it's going to be actually improved. So I think a lot of what we're going to see this season is going to come down to that starting rotation. And the leader of that rotation is Masahiro Tanaka. It's the guy that we paid to be the ace. You and I have talked about this. We don't think he's an ace. He's not the dominant type of ace that you would think of. He's not like a big horse guy who throws 100 miles an hour that you can rely on. He's the guy that's going to, at this point, I mean, what we've seen, he's going to bite corners. He's going to make sure that splitter is down, and he's going to throw – you know, he's going to fool a lot of guys. And if he's not on and pitching well, then we need other guys to really step up, guys who have not been in that situation before. So I think that he really does need to be the leader and to be that true number one. And I'm not saying number one where he's got to go out and pitch to a, you know, 1 point something ERA, two ERA, but he's got to come out every fifth day and pitch well and deep into the game.
Every fifth day, huh? He's going to go on the DL. I just have no confidence in him staying healthy for an entire season. I'm not saying he's going to have, you know, shredded elbow and need Tommy John surgery, but he will go on the DL and miss a handful of starts this year. It's just, I think that's what we have with him. So I don't think that's, and I think if that happens, I don't think the Yankee season is over, but... So
that's not what I mean. I'm saying this guy's got to pitch well. Yeah. We need to see him pitch well when he's pitching.
Yes.
And no, and it cannot be a long-term injury. I agree with you. I think we're going to see a 15-day stint, because that's just what happens. I mean, if there's any kind of – if something is going on, and they're going to be very cautious with him, obviously, because of that contract. We know what they do. They're going to baby him if something is not right. He's not going to pitch through anything. That's not going to happen. So, yes, there may be one or two 15-day stints, probably at minimum. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, it needs to be just that. It needs to be like one stint, but he needs to pitch well when he's out there.
Yeah.
And he needs to go deep in games.
Right. Like you said, when he's out there, he needs to be the Yankees' best pitcher. He needs to be, you need to go into that game saying, we have Tanaka on the mound. We're going to win tonight. Maybe he stops a losing streak, or it's a big, you know, a big matchup against the Blue Jays, or something's going on where we feel confident with Tanaka on the mound, the Yankees have a good chance at winning. And every staff needs one of those, including ours. So,
and let me tell you who a guy I just came to my mind who I kind of want him to be like. And this is a guy that, to me, like when everything started in you know, in the early dynasty, Jimmy Key was a guy who was a, you know, a number one pitcher, but he wasn't really a true number one. Like, he was a guy that we would always rely on. It seemed like every single time he went out there, he didn't have dominant stuff, but he would always, he pitched well, and we knew we had an opportunity when Jimmy Key was pitching. And Tanaka kind of reminds me of a guy like that. He's not an overpowering guy, but he needs to be that guy that is a stopper. He needs to be the Andy Pettit stopper. We know if there's a losing streak and Tanaka's up, we know we're gonna get back on the right track. He needs to be that type of guy where we can rely on. I don't care if he's throwing 96 miles an hour. He just needs to be effective with the stuff that he has. He needs to be that smart of a pitcher and good of a pitcher where, even if it's not his best day, he needs to be able to keep us in games and give this club an opportunity to win when he starts a game.
Yeah, it's hard to agree with what you said, but my X factor this year is Mark Teixeira. If you listen to this podcast from the beginning, you know about a year ago I said Mark Teixeira is the Yankees' X factor. And I think it played out pretty good in 2015. We saw how much his injury affected the team. Even though Greg Bird gave them a ton of production, the Yankees were not as good of a team when Teixeira was not batting cleanup. And if he's healthy this year, which is just as big of an if as it is with Tanaka, if he's healthy and producing like he was last year, I think the offense will be fine. And especially against left-handed pitchers, when you add that right-handed bat into the lineup, which Greg Bird was not, it does really help the lineup. So I'm sticking with it. Once again, in 2016, Mark Teixeira is the Yankees X factor.
Well, I think one of the big reasons he was such an X factor last year, and I'll give you credit because he was the guy that, I mean, when he went down, the lineup changed just absolutely drastically. The fact that Castro's in there now, and we have a guy that has the ability to hit at the top of the order, could definitely soften that blow. I mean, granted, I think Teixeira with the power, we need that power. We need Teixeira. We need Teixeira, A-Rod, and McCann to hit, and Beltran to stay healthy. Because I think if Beltran's healthy, he's going to hit. But I think it's not as much of an X factor. He's not as much of an X factor, in my opinion, this year because of Castro, because of the flexibility that we can add him to the top of the lineup. But you're right. I mean, he's a guy. There is no Greg Bird. There's no Greg Bird to come in and to play first base. It's Dustin Ackley. That's the guy who's going to be playing first base if Teixeira goes down. So it's a different type of guy. And the fact that Bird's out for the season definitely makes the Teixeira, making his health a bigger issue. I mean, it's a much bigger concern at this point because there is no saving grace behind him.
And it was a freak injury last year. You foul a ball off of his knee and or his shin, whatever it was. And I mean, that's a freak injury. But freak injuries seem to find guys like Teixeira and Ellsbury and these guys. So if he's healthy for 150 games this year, I will be surprised. But I think if he is, the Yankees offense should be fine.
And he's continued the no fun diet, as he claims, is the gluten free. So we we're on the horse. I mean, I must have hashtag gluten free 15 times last year when Teixeira was going right, because
he's on the no grain train still.
Yeah, he seems like he's in very good shape. He feels good. His mentality is there. He knows he has a lot of baseball left. This is another guy who's also playing for a contract. I mean, he's playing for a contract for probably somebody else, some other team, and he's got to prove that he can stay healthy and contribute all year long. So he's got a lot of money coming up behind him as well.
All right, let's preview this Astros series. So game one of the season, Tanaka versus Keuchel. We're back. We're back into the wild card playoff game. It's like flashback to October. Not much has changed. Same teams going at it. This is the last time we saw the Yankees in a game that mattered was against the Astros at home with Tanaka on the mound. But here it is again. I mean, I feel foolish breaking down, this is what the Yankees need to do to beat Keuchel because it is the first game of the season. But they couldn't touch him last year. The dude might as well have been Sandy Koufax against the Yankees. He gave up zero runs in 19
scoreless innings. I'll never forget that number. It's awful. This is a guy that's like our kryptonite, you know. So I'm really hoping on day one that we can overcome our kryptonite and just knock him out. I hope Starlin Castro does the damage, and I hope he brings his song back, and I hope that the stadium is rocking, which I really am. I'm just hoping. I'm not really expecting, but I'm hoping. But this is a guy that we need to overcome. Dallas Keuchel. It needs to happen. Just mentally, we need to overcome him.
We don't know the lineup. It's Sunday night. I think by 11 a.m. on Monday, when people are listening to this, they're going to know the lineup. But even though it's a tough lefty, I don't expect Girardi to get fancy, you know, putting in extra righties. He's going to go with his. His opening day lineup, which I think we saw towards the end of spring training, something like Ellsbury, Gardner, A-Rod, Teixeira, McCann, Beltran, Headley, Castro, Didi.
So what if he actually makes another decision and benches Ellsbury again for Gardner?
Hilarious.
I don't see that happening. But this would be a guy that you could put Castro up at the top of the lineup as like a number two dude. I think he would slot in very well.
So I would love to see Castro. I mean, Castro's been hitting...
He's on fire right now.
Since the All-Star break last year. He's been hitting 360 since the All-Star break last year. I know it's only spring training, but, I mean...
He continued it.
Raked in spring training. I think he's still going to be seventh or eighth in the lineup. I would love to see him bat second and put Gardner down at the bottom. I think having a guy like Castro against a tough lefty batting second with A-Rod behind him, I think it would be a tremendous move. We'll see if Girardi actually does it, though. And then we're going to see Pineda versus McHugh, and then your favorite pitcher, Evaldi versus Fears, to round out the Astros series. And the Yankees will go with Severino and then CC to round out their rotation. I think I'm just excited to finally sink my teeth into some actual baseball. We have been projecting and breaking down and analyzing
since October,
speculating since October. And I just feel like I need to watch some real stuff.
You know, and you're mentioning the lineup of the pitchers for this series. And, you know, if I wasn't going to pick Tanaka as an X factor, I mean, I told you how I've grown more concerned with this starting rotation. It needs to be healthy. And Pineda's another guy who needs to really he needs to come alive this season. He needs to be the guy that he really can be. I mean, if you look up and down the pitching rotation, him and Severino probably have the best stuff of any guys, right? I mean, Pineda's got some of the best stuff in Major League Baseball. When he's right, he's phenomenal. He throws hard. He's got great movement on his stuff. He's a big dude.
Yeah,
he's just a guy that needs to put it together for a full season. And if he does, watch out, because I think that a lot of guys can build off of that, and there's confidence through the rotation. And I think these guys, when one guy is going well, then I think a lot of these guys can feed off of each other. But I think Pineda's another big guy that just has so much potential, and we need to see it this year and for an extended period of time.
It's tough though. Every time we saw it, then he would relapse mentally, and he'd have
Jekyll and Hyde,
these blow up games or these blow up innings where it looked like he was on a different planet, misfielding balls, walking guys, hitting guys. I mean, it can disappear for him in a second. So
another year wiser, another year older. Now that he knows that the Yankees won the trade, Montero's gone.
I'm sure that was really weighing on him.
It must have been weighing on him. So now he's very confident in his position as far as the way that trade went. So now everything is behind him, and he just needs to go out there and throw the way Michael Pineda can throw at his best. I need to see Michael Pineda's best more consistently. I think that's another big factor for this season.
All right, so before we wrap up this episode, we are going to preview our last two teams, which is the Blue Jays and the Rays, and then we have some predictions for you at the end of the episode where Scott and I are going to pick each division and wildcard winner, which after you listen to those, definitely head straight to Vegas and put all your money on our picks because we know what we're talking about. First thing, though, Panda on the bench for the Red Sox. How about that? $95 million Pablo Sandoval, who came into spring training like 80 pounds overweight. And for a guy that fat to come in that overweight is kind of impressive when you think about it. But he's benched for the season.
He's benched for the season. He's done.
He is not the opening day third baseman. And talk about a bad contract. That might go down in history as the worst ever for the Red Sox. And they've had some real shitty contracts recently.
And I'm telling you, I keep hearing little whispers that the Padres are scouting Sandoval. I swear to God, if someone bails him out of this contract, I'm going to be livid, because what the Dodgers did to the Red Sox just completely took them out of probably a 5-year terrible, terrible run that they were going to have with those awful contracts of Beckett and Crawford. And, you know, those were just the fact that the Dodgers bailed them out of that made me so angry. And if someone does that for Sandoval, it's going to really piss me off. I really need to see that fat bastard on this team for the duration of that contract. But yeah, I mean, look, they benched him. I think it was kind of a message to the rest of the team that it doesn't matter. I'm surprised that he was allowed to do it, but it happened. And Travis Shaw won the job. And I guess Sandoval is going to be, see, this is the bad thing. He's going to be eating Cracker Jacks during the game. He's going to gain more weight.
Exactly. If they think this is going to motivate him, you don't know Pablo Sandoval. He's like, oh, you mean I don't have to play? So do I still get my paycheck every 2 weeks? Yes. Oh, okay, cool. I'll be over here just fine.
Chicken wings and beer in the dugout. Back in the Red Sox clubhouse. Let's go.
His agent did have a funny quote. Said, you don't leave the Ferrari in the garage when you want to win. I don't know what kind of Ferraris his agent is driving, but that is not a Ferrari. That is an Oldsmobile, my friend.
Yeah, it's a station wagon. He's a fat boy station wagon.
All right, let's preview the Blue Jays. So our rival at the end of last year, I think the Blue Jays fans especially got on.
Oh my God, where did they come from? They're still everywhere too. In spring training, they were half the freaking season or half the stadium was packed with Blue Jay fans when I went to the game.
They were never a thought in either of our minds. They hadn't won since the early 90s, and the Yankees were not relevant in the early 90s. So the Blue Jays, this last year was the first year that really annoyed me. But they are projected to finish third in the AL East, 86 wins. But they are projected to score the most runs in the league, which I think, I mean, I would pick them to have the best offense. There's no questions. their offense, especially their 3-4-5 or whatever they do, 2-3-4, is a gauntlet. They're going to hit a ton of home runs. They've got that jet stream working up in Rogers Center that, you know, there's always these rumors that they're videotaping and they have signals coming from center field. Whatever's going on up there, you know, they can get some PEDs easier because it's across the border. Whatever's going on up in Toronto.
All these prescription online pharmacies.
Yeah, the result is everyone's a 40 home run hitter when you go to Toronto. But the question is not their offense is what I'm getting at. Their questions are their pitching staff.
And there's some serious question marks, in my opinion. I think Marcus Stroman's a guy that got hurt last year and is coming back. He's pitching right now. I don't even know what's going on in the game. But he's a guy that obviously is one of their top prospects, and he's a young dude who they expect to anchor this rotation. So if he's a guy, he's got to take that David Price role. I mean, they lost a number one starter, a stud guy that they would roll out every fifth day, and they don't have that. And you're right. They're going to score a ridiculous amount of runs. I think – there's a couple things that need to happen for them. One, Tulowitzki's got to stay healthy, which we have not seen him stay healthy for a season in a long time. So to me, that's a guy
we're not
that,
watching the game right now. There's roughly a 30% chance he's already pulled a hamstring.
Yeah. So Tulowitzki's a guy there. And then, you know, Encarnacion's a guy who's had he's had some bad seasons. He's had some good seasons. He's had some injuries. He's another guy that has to stay healthy for them. But, you know, they're going to hit home runs. These guys, the middle of their lineup is just filthy. And with Donaldson, you know, mashing the way he is, coming off of MVP season, they have a lot of firepower. And now apparently Jesus Montero is going to be part of the 40 club too, because they just got him.
He didn't make the team though, did he?
I have no idea. I don't know. He's probably if they can. I don't know if you can get another minor league option once you get to a new team, but I'm sure he'll start in the minors.
Yeah, Stroman is a huge question mark. That's a lot of pressure for a guy who is now the ace of the team. He's got great stuff, but. He's really the only pitcher where you would look at him and say he can shut us down, but we don't know if he can handle it. After Stroman, you got Estrada, R.A. Dickey, who I guess is still pitching, and J.A. Happ, who they signed this offseason. That is an ugly rotation.
Well, and Estrada's a guy who hits maybe 88, 89 miles per hour and pitched effectively against the Yankees a few times last year. It was so frustrating to watch. I can't handle when I see that. And they need to get on top of him. I mean, these are the guys that need to hit. R.A. Dickey's a 500 pitcher. He always will be. He had one good year and capitalized off of that. Good for him. But he's a knuckleballer. He's a 50-50 guy, you know? It's either going to work or it's not going to work. He's going to have probably 11 wins and 11 losses. And J.A. Happ's a guy who had some early success in his career, got hit, if you remember. He's one of the pitchers who actually wears the armor and the helmet in the hat. He's a guy who can pitch well, you know, but he's not like a big scary guy. He's a guy who probably throws, again, high 80s, low 90s, and can pitch effectively. But you're right, Stroman is a very big part of that rotation, and they're going to live and die by their pitching staff.
So here's the biggest question facing the Blue Jays this year. Come July, if they're like nine games under 500, how empty is that stadium going to be?
Extremely empty. They're not even going to remember what baseball is. I don't even know what they'll go to.
They'll be talking Leafs hockey.
Is that what you do in at that point? I guess hockey is like almost every month. There's always hockey on. So yeah,
they'll be talking curling.
They will be the fastest fan base to abandon their team in baseball history, no doubt.
And I will not be afraid to call them out on Twitter. All right, Tampa Rays, who are Baseball Prospectus keeps bumping their win total up. They're now
89 wins.
That's crazy. Which is a game ahead of the Red Sox in the division, according to the projections. They're going to have a really good pitching staff, obviously, when you talk about Chris Archer, Odorizzi, Smiley, Matt Moore. Those are all young arms. I think the oldest one of those guys is 28 years old. So they're all really good young arms. That's never in question. But, I mean, they're the Blue Jays, but the complete opposite. Can they hit? That's the biggest question.
Well, and I think their rotation has some very, very big question marks as far as health. I mean, Matt Moore's a guy who missed not last year, but the year before came up. I think he had Tommy John, but he's a guy that's always been, you know, when he was healthy, he had a very, very high ceiling. They thought he was going to be just a stud dude. He's a left-handed pitcher. When he's on, he's on. But, you know, when is he on? He didn't come back from that injury and look like the same guy. So I think that's a big question mark to me. And then we know what Chris Archer is. Chris Archer dominates the Yankees. He always has. He's a really, really tough guy against the Yankees. The games against Archer will be interesting
Archer's
to watch.
Archer's also one of my favorite players in the league, I've come to realize. I thought he was really personable.
I was going to say, is it his personality on the
podcast? He's just a good guy that strikes me as somebody who I would really root for if he was on my team.
Yeah, he does have a good personality. You can tell he loves baseball. He's outgoing, and he's good on the broadcast. He actually is pretty good. He's a young dude. He's a good pitcher. I mean, I don't really hate him yet, so I'm waiting for.
It's hard to hate someone like that. Is what I'm saying.
I can hate them. I can definitely hate them. If I see you know sustained success against my team, I'm gonna hate you.
That's the thing where the Rays have not been relevant the last couple of years.
Not with Chris Archer there. Not as much. Yeah, he wasn't really there when they were at their peak. So I think he came in right after that. But you know, he's a guy that has number one stuff for sure. He's probably one of the better young pitchers in the league, and he's had the Yankees number for a long time. So. You know, hopefully we can get on top of him. But you're right. The offense is I don't even know what to tell you about the offense. I don't know half the people on their team. They're all a bunch of no-name guys. And, I mean, it's going to be about their pitching. They need to win with defense and pitching.
Longoria is going to have to put up MVP numbers if they want to compete.
But he's not that guy anymore. I don't think that's even possible. I don't think Longoria has that in him anymore. I really don't.
He's still young. He's not past his prime.
No, I think he's been beat up. If you look at the past couple of years, he just hasn't been. I mean, he's been a good player, but he's not been a great player.
Kind of like David Wright, where
it's a very good comparison. Even though David Wright, I think, is a little older. Longoria is not that young.
David Wright from 5 years ago is what Longoria is now.
How old? I'm not sure how old Longoria is. He's got to be 30, right?
I would guess 28.
All right. Well, either way, I don't think he has that in him. I don't think he's that type of player anymore. And the fact that they do need him is a big problem, in my opinion. He's 30 years old. I just looked it up. So he's a guy that has shown some decline in his career. And I just don't know. I mean, Steven Souza Jr. is a guy that you could look at who had some good, you know, had some, I guess the end of the year at some point he had a pretty good run. He's got to stay healthy and be effective for an entire year. There's just a lot of question marks around this team. I don't understand where people who do this for a living, Baseball Prospectus, I don't understand how you can have them at 89 wins.
It's the pitching.
Where are you coming up with that?
It's the pitching.
And I guess, but.
Yeah, they do have a chance to win the division. I think I said this last week.
But everybody does.
The Orioles don't. But the Rays, I think, have the second least amount of chance to win the AL East. They're going to be good because, again, you go in and you have to face Archer, Odorizzi, and Smiley in a three-game series. You could be looking at two runs total. So there is that potential that they have. But they could lose a lot of games 2-1 as well. So I don't know. I agree with you. I don't know where people are getting this 89 win total.
I don't personally think anybody in the American League is going to win 89 games, in all honesty. I think this division is going to be won, you know, very close to 85. I really think this is going to be a bloodbath the entire time. I think a lot of these teams are very close. You know, some are better in certain areas, but if you look at the teams overall, I think we're seeing a lot of very similar, you know, talent-wise teams. And I think there's going to be, you know, with the amount of games that we play each other, I think there's going to be a lot of you know, if there's 18 games, you're going to see some 9-9s in there. You're going to see a lot of, you know, back and forth. So I just don't see a very big win total coming from American League East team.
So then you're going to have to win the division then. It's going to be hard to win wild card.
No doubt. I agree. Yeah, it's going to be, I don't think the wild card's coming from us.
All right, well, let's talk about that. So let's first do the National League and then we'll do the American League. If you had to pick a winner in the NL East, who would it be?
The NL East, I am picking the Washington Nationals. And one, I just don't want to pick the Mets. I don't actually think – I'm waiting for kind of a sophomore slump for the Mets, to tell you the truth. And I think the Nationals really underperformed last year. And you saw Strasburg come back at the end of the year, pitch very well. And I think he's going to have a good season. I think that Gio Gonzalez is due for a bounce back. looking at a number one ace with Max Scherzer, and I think that's a very formidable starting rotation. When you look 1-2-3, these guys are, they have offense. They can hit the ball, and I think they're due for a bounce back beat. And I think they're kind of pissed off that the Mets kind of leaped them last year.
Yeah,
I think they're ready for it.
So I'm with you. I'm on the Nationals train, and it's not because I think they're going to, not because, like you said, the Mets are going to take a step back. I think there's some bad blood between them and the Mets, and I think they're going to be fired up. New manager, Dusty Baker. Matt Williams was an absolute disaster. Bryce Harper is going to have another MVP-type season, so I'm as well picking the Nationals to win the East. All right, who do we got in the Central? Who do you got winning the Central?
Chicago Cubs. I think the Chicago Cubs are ready and poised to make a move. I think the NL Central is going to be the most highly contested division again in any division of
98
baseball.
98 winners, 99 yeah. game winners is insane.
It really, really is crazy. The one thing I do expect, and I know many people don't project this because it never happens, but I actually do think this is the year that the Cardinals take a step back. I think there's just too many things that they have to overcome this year. They've lost, they lost Hayward. They lost Lackey, who was significant for them last year. And both of those guys, mind you, went to the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah.
So the fact that they lost those two guys, and I know they have some outfield depth. They have a couple guys that they're really expecting to take bigger roles. I think their starting rotation is going to be, I know they have Wainwright and Waka, but behind that, it's I think, a little dicey. And I just think this is the year where the Cubs are, we know what they have. I mean, they're loaded. They're loaded in the rotation now. Their top three guys are good. And their offense is young and fired up and can hit the ball every part of the ballpark. I mean, they're fun to watch.
It's not, I mean, it's the trendy pick. Everyone's picking the Cubs.
No doubt.
They're the number one team as far as Vegas goes to win the World Series, which is insane because they haven't won it in over 100 years. But, I mean, you look at that roster and it's like, how could they not win the division? They are absolutely stacked. And like you said, Cardinals, yeah, I see Cardinals being like a 500 team. All right, West.
They're not going to be 500. I don't think they'll be that bad. I think they'll be better than that, but I just think they'll take a step back.
Right,
they won 100 games or almost 100 games last year.
I know. All right, we agreed on the first two, but who do you have in the West?
I think the Dodgers are going to win the West. I think the West is interesting because, you got a lot of teams in there who could do damage. I think the Padres are out. I think the Padres will not. I think they will finish at the bottom.
And the Rockies stink.
And the Rockies are terrible as well. But you look at what the Diamondbacks did this offseason. They definitely loaded up as far as their pitching. So that's a lot better. They have stud with Paul Goldschmidt. And they got another kid from the Brewers, the shortstop, Segura. So he's kind of like waiting for kind of another breakout, kind of a comeback of the player year of the award. But we'll see how they do. I don't think they're ready. I think they may be a year away. I still think the Dodgers have the edge there. I think they're going to have a really good year from a full season with the Seager kid who's playing shortstop, their number one prospect. I think we're going to see a lot of good things out of him. And I think Jock Peterson's going to take another step up, and we're going to see Clayton Kershaw just have a good season. So I think the Dodgers are going to take that. It'll be a close division, though.
So I'm actually going Giants because typical Giants fashion, World Series, missed the playoffs. World Series, missed the playoffs. World Series, missed the playoffs last year, so they're due to have a good season this year. Also, they did retool. They brought in, like it or not, they brought in Cueto and Samardzija, who should be better.
Samardzija's been awful, too.
I know, but they're going to the National League, big pitcher's ballpark. They should be fine. Yeah. I think that they'll have enough. And Buster Posey, he's I think, going to have a good year. So I'm going Giants. And in the wild card, I have the Mets and the Dodgers, who you just spoke about, the Dodgers. And yeah, I mean, the Mets are going to be good again because they have a filthy pitching staff, but they're not going to hit a lot. It's going to be more like first half Mets last year offense than it is second half Mets, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to see what Cespedes does for a full season if he's just going to be a train wreck in the clubhouse. I mean, he's getting so much attention already just for the ball that he stopped on in the outfield. I mean, it was awesome to see, actually. And all the ridiculous things that he rolled into in spring training. I think Conforto is going to be a very important part of that offense. I do have the Mets as well as my team, as one of my first wild cards. Did you say your second one?
Yeah. Sorry. So I have Mets and Dodgers.
Okay. So the Dodgers, I have them winning division. I think the second wild card is going to come from the Central, and I think it's going to be the Pirates. Okay. think the Pirates are just I think the Pirates are seasoned. I think their outfield is filthy. I think Andrew McCutchen is one of the best players in baseball. He's one of my favorite players too.
Yeah, no, yeah, I agree. I love McCutchen. And it's not a bad pick considering they seem to be in a wild card game every year.
Yeah, and you know, I think they're ready to take that move. I think Gerrit Cole is a legit number one, which makes me so mad because he could have been a Yankee. And then Francisco Liriano is just a guy who seems to go out there and pitch well every time he goes out.
Definitely the second half of his career has been, I mean, really amazing when you think about it. I thought he was done when he left Minnesota.
Yeah, he had some really down years. I don't remember if it was an injury, what happened there, but he definitely, you know, if he changed his style, I haven't really followed his career as much, but he's definitely had a lot of success with the Pirates. So, and then they have their offense is going to be very good. I mean, our boy Cervelli's over there; he's probably going to hit. And you know,
had a triple today.
Yeah, they're kind of a fun team. I kind of root for the Pirates. I think you know, back to the Andy Van Slyke Pirates with the squared off hats.
Oh yeah,
I think they should bring those back.
Love those.
But yeah, I think the Pirates are another good team. And so yeah, Meth Pirates.
Nice. All right, let's move it over to the American League. We'll do the East last to build some suspense for everybody.
Dun, dun, dun.
In the Central, I have the White Sox, which I think is a pick out of left field. I'm picking the White Sox for a couple reasons. I love Todd Frazier. I think he's going to bring a lot of leadership to that team. He's going to add some stability to that middle of the order, along with Abreu as well. And they have still Melky Cabrera and some other guys. Chris Sale, I think, you know, pound for pound might be the nastiest pitcher in baseball.
Pound for pound, I like it.
Yeah. Get it? Because he's really, really skinny.
I get it. I do.
I just think that division is going to be, I think it's not going to be a very good division. And I think the White Sox are going to emerge as the most stable team and win it with like 80, 85 wins or something like that.
This is the World Series champion division, right? It's the same one we're talking about.
I understand that, but they're taking a step back. They got worse in the offseason.
Yeah, so I agree that the Royals will not win the AL Central. I actually have the Tigers. I think the Tigers are going to bounce back. I think Miguel Cabrera is healthier this year. I think he's going to have a bounce back year. They added Jordan Zimmermann. I think that Verlander is going to have a bounce back year. I don't think he's going to be the same guy he was, but I definitely expect him to be more of a, you know, a dependable pitcher, a dependable starter for them. And I think their offense is just too good. And I think they, you know, with the guys like Martinez hitting, with everybody else around them, if they
Upton,
can stay healthy,
Justin Upton as well.
Justin Upton addition, yeah, they're just they have a very, very solid offense, and I think they're going to win. I think they're going to bounce back because I think last year a lot of people thought they were going to win the division.
Right, and even when they were healthy, though, they were kind of a mediocre team. So yeah. I look at it and I'm saying, well, did they really get better compared to early season last year? And I say no, because I'd rather have David Price than Jordan Zimmermann. And I'd rather have, or at least Cespedes is a wash with Justin Upton.
I agree with that, but I don't think they had a really healthy Miguel Cabrera, too. And I think he's such an integral part of that team.
I mean, he's a beast.
I mean, the guy's, I mean, triple crown winner. He's one of the best, you know, one of the best hitters of our generation. I mean, he's that type of guy. So he does change a complete team, in my opinion, or a lineup. So I think that they will bounce back. I think that they're poised for that. I kind of agree with you. I think Kansas City will be there. A lot of these, I don't think there's going to be very many divisions that are runaways. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of highly contested divisions across baseball, period. And I think we're going to see a very exciting last week of baseball this year again.
A lot of parity in the league. I would agree with that.
Yeah. A lot of these teams can thank the New York Yankees for all the money that they're giving them.
Who do you got winning the West?
I have the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers. I think the Texas Rangers are going to take another step forward. They are one now. They have a full season with not a full season, but they have a full season with some better starting pitching. I think the addition of Cole Hamels for a full season is very important. I think Hugh Darvish will be back. What, end of May, June, around that time? He's coming back off Tommy John. We know that. But the fact that they'll have Cole Hamels and Darvish by spring or by the All-Star break, I think that division is very winnable. I see the Astros taking a step back. I don't think they'll be as good. And I think the Rangers have, you know, some pop. I could see a lot of their offense actually stepping up. We'll see if they can get anything from Josh Hamilton. I mean, that guy's not even I don't even know if he's going to be a starter anymore, but you know, that's a guy that is a supposedly healthy again and feels as well as he has from what he's saying in 5 years. So
I would agree with you. I like the Rangers. I think they have a lot of talent, and I think their offense was really clicking last year. Prince Fielder was playing like an MVP. I think he hit like 330 or something like that. So he's a force in the middle of that order, and I see him being that again. Once he stopped playing the field and just could focus on hitting, which I'm sure the Red Sox wish that Pablo Sandoval could do something like that. I do see the Rangers winning that as well. And all right, last but not least, the Yankees division, the AL East. Who do you have winning our division?
I mean, come on, are you kidding me? I'm probably the most optimistic Yankee fan you're gonna
meet. Oh, what a homer!
We all know. Yeah, you're goddamn right. If it's a toss up, and I think, because that's what I think it is, I think it's gonna come down to the last week. Of course, I'm gonna take the New York Yankees. I think the New York Yankees have a team that is ready to win now. I think the fact that their offense is a lot more balanced. You know, we're a lot younger than most people think we are. I mean, when people outside the organization and outside our fan base look at our team and think about our team, they still think of us as an old team. But we're not that old anymore. We're getting a hell of a lot younger. Mark Teixeira is like an old man in a young man's body. I think that Starlin Castro is going to have a big year. I think Didi's going to really contribute. I think Headley's going to have a bounce back year. I think we're going to see finally a full season from Jacoby Ellsbury, and we're going to be not as soured on that contract, at least for 1 year. And I think we're going to see guys step up. I really believe that we have good depth. Their bullpen, obviously, when he's back from suspension, that we're going to have the most dominant bullpen in baseball history. And I think that's going to really take a lot of pressure off of the starting rotation, which is, you know, obviously, I think the biggest deficit on the Yankees team. So I got the New York Yankees winning the division.
Go ahead, scumbag.
Tell us what you got.
I'm shocked by your pick. I agree with you. Everything you said with the Yankees, which is exactly why I am picking the Red Sox to win the AL East. I'm a sadistic bastard.
Ugh.
Two reasons why I'm picking the Red Sox. One, because I feel like if I pick it, then I jinx it and it's not going to happen. And number two, I also feel if I pick the Yankees, I'm going to jinx it and it's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's a good pessimistic way to look at it, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's such a toss-up that so many things can happen. I think this AL East is really up for grabs.
It's so hard to pick. I mean, all of the teams except the Orioles, in my opinion, are all pretty much identical as far as win total, if I had to pick it. So mid-80s, mid to high-80s, they're all capable of that. So it's really difficult.
End of the year, this bullpen is going to be massively important.
That's a great point. You know, it comes down to the last 2 weeks of the season, and they're all within one or two games of one another. I like the Yankees' chances to put nails in the coffins of some games. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Hard to argue with that.
And the other thing is about our September call-ups. I think we have some guys that hopefully, if all goes well, can actually contribute in September, too.
It's hard to count on September call-ups.
No doubt. I'm just saying at the end of the year, I think there's people who can contribute. And I think that the fact that we have minor league depth now, finally, is just so refreshing and so nice to see that I think we can sustain injuries in as far as the position player. And I think that, you know, the Yankees are, I think they're ready. I really do. I believe that this is a big year for them.
Well, I still have them making the playoffs. I have them versus the Astros. So a rematch of the wild card game in 2015. I think the Astros are only going to get better than they were last year. I think they're a young team that's going to really start to gel. So I think they're a really good team. And I do have the Yankees making the playoffs. And hey, if it means the Yankees and the Red Sox are battling it for the division, that's going to be highly entertaining. So I'm looking forward
to that. I do hope that happens. I really hope it's just the two of us at the top, because I want to start hating the Red Sox again. And I mean, granted, I don't like them. I still do hate them. I just don't have the same hatred I used to. And I really want that back. It's a good feeling to hate that team. It really is. And it just makes things so much more exciting. I love to hate them. So you have the Astros. I also have the Astros. The reason I don't think they're going to take a very big step back. I think they'll take slightly step back because I don't think their pitching is as good as people think it is. I mean, we know what Dallas Keuchel is. He's a phenomenal. But behind him, I just don't think they're as good as a lot of people are picking right now. But I think their offense is going to get better. I think George Springer is going to have a big year. I think he's a guy pride of Connecticut, as Susan Waldman says. I think he's going to have a good year and really come into his own. Could be a breakout guy. And then the other one is, and also as a point to talk about that division, I think there's a lot of wins in that division too. Mm-hmm. I think that the Rangers and the Astros could really, really feed on the rest of the division, because I don't think the Mariners are very good. I don't think the Angels are very good. And I certainly don't think the Athletics are very good. So I think there's a lot of wins to be got in that division.
That's a great point. That is a good point. Each of those teams could be in the 90s.
Yeah. And then the other one is the Kansas City Royals, because I can't count these guys out. I think they have so much, you know, talent-wise, like you said, they lost guys. There's no doubt. They lost the Zobrist. They lost Cueto. But I think these guys have such a good gel, and these guys really just play so well together that because they came up together that, you know, I don't think you're going to see much of a fall-off.
World Series hangover, though? They came off losing the World Series in Game 7 fired up. They had a taste. It was right there at the tip of their
fingers.
You could
go the other way, though, with that. You could go, like, you know, disappointment and take it a step back from there. I don't know. I don't think they have that in them. I think these guys are a resilient bunch. I actually think this could be a really big – I mean, if you remember at the end of last year, we were talking about the possibility of the Royals being the next great dynasty team. That was conversations
I wrote that blog.
and then they
went out, though, and didn't bring in any starting pitching. They only lost starting pitching, so.
What are you talking about? They got Ian Kennedy.
Oh, boy. I forgot about Ian Kennedy. They paid him like $18 million, right?
Yeah, they definitely overpaid for Ian Kennedy. But they're a team that I think they're foundationally strong. And I think when you have a team like that plays well, and they know how to win. They just know how to win. I think they have a great coaching staff. I think they have great leadership on that team. And, you know, I just don't put much past them. So I have them as the second wild card spot.
Excellent. So as I said earlier, take your life savings, go straight to Vegas or some illegal bookie gambling website, and put all your money on those picks, because, and then give Scott and I a cut. I think we deserve it.
Oh yeah, 10% finder's fee, easy.
So hopefully it's about time for you to turn on John and Susan and get fired up for opening day. I'm extremely excited. I cannot tell you how excited I am. I probably won't even sleep tonight. That's how excited I am.
It is. It's kind of like Christmas. It's one of those days where you're just looking forward to it. I love the fact that it's a day game. So, you know, it's just, you don't have to wait as long. And yeah, hope you guys are listening to this leading up to the game. And I'm pumped up, man. You know, like I said in the beginning of this, it's been such a long winter as far as you and me talking about baseball, projecting, and just completely spitting nonsense at you, because nothing is – it's all speculation from two guys who are just giant Yankee fans. And we feel like we kind of know what we're talking about. We probably don't. But, yeah, now everything is for real. The rubber meets the road and ready to go, man.
Also, a little bit of programming note that Scott and I are going to possibly do a midweek blab, which is kind of like a podcast, but it'll allow for some live interaction. So definitely
it's video.
Video, yeah. Live video interaction. I guess you could say it's similar to Periscope, but I think it produces a little bit better audio quality, so you could repost it, which is good. So keep an eye out for that. Follow me.
It'll definitely be better audio quality than our last Periscope.
Than the Lost Files, where you got a computer virus had to download illegally.
Yes.
Keep an eye out on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes, and we'll be talking about that. Definitely follow me on Twitter at Yankees_talk. Follow Scott at Scott Reinen. Scott, any last words before opening day?
If you are a loyal listener to the show, one, we totally appreciate everything you do. I mean, we do the show every week for the fans. We love when you guys interact with us, the mailbags, the voicemails, just the on Twitter. We want to thank you very much. We're so excited for this season, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and we definitely want more interaction with fans as much as possible. So please do that. And also, if you listen to us on iTunes, the beginning of the year is an extremely good part, a big part for us to kind of jump in the rankings so more people can actually find our show. So just head over to iTunes and give us a review and rating, you know, just an honest review. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us out big time and definitely gets us in front of more eyeballs and
honest review, as long as it's a 5-star rating and you say we're awesome.
Yeah, if you don't think we're awesome, you can you can take it somewhere else.
But if you're listening and you're 66 episodes in and you're still listening, then you probably are at least okay with the product. So definitely give it a review, like Scott said. Yeah, let's go, baby. Opening day. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.